Mouth.
Word of 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 mouth.
Well done.
Mouth. This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. In July, NPR Weekend Edition Saturday host Scott Simon started tweeting from the Chicago hospital room where his mother, Patricia, landed after complications from surgery. For the next week, Scott's tweets became a real-time record of her decline for his more than 1.2 million Twitter followers. The raw, often bittersweet posts went viral among celebrities, media outlets, and strangers drawn to his example of public grief. The extraordinary response to Scott Simon's Twitter vigil stirred up conversations about the taboo topic of death and a debate on social media's place in mourning. Paul Biseglio edits the literary magazine The Land That I Live. He wrote about how social media is changing the way we approach death for The Atlantic. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I was among those following Scott's vigil on Twitter and spoke about it on this program. So talk to us about the conversation and the debate ignited by those tweets.
When the tweets first started coming out, I think the biggest conversation surrounding them was a question of the appropriateness of the tweets. Tweets about death are something that people should be doing at all. Over time, and what I was trying to write about was, I think the conversation has started to shift less to a question of the appropriateness and more to a question of what the effects of this tweeting about death are going to be.
Scott Simon was very clear that he did not tweet everything that was going on in this week with his mother. But people's response raises the question of why and maybe when death became a big taboo to talk about in public. Is this a particularly American thing?
Some people say yes, absolutely. I spoke with an author named Larry Samuel, who wrote a book called Death American Style, and he makes the case that death became taboo starting in the early 20th century, around the 1920s and on. He does sort of cultural overlook over the 20th century and makes the argument that factors like World War I, the 1918 flu epidemic, modern medicine, and the decline of religion sort of push death out of everyday normal conversation into something that is always present but rarely talked about.
So now we live in this age where every event, you know, large or small, is shared on social media. Doesn't it make sense that death makes its way in as well?
I'm a younger guy, and I come from a generation that is accustomed to sharing everything on social media. You know, I have friends who will tweet pictures of the breakfast that they ate. So as that digital generation, a social media savvy generation, ages, I think it's increasingly making sense that people will turn to social media to talk about more serious issues like dying.
If we think, Paul, of social media as almost like a contemporary analogy to the public square, there seems like there's a wish, there's a pull to recall a time when people did discuss death publicly. People were waked in the home. They hung black ribbons on the door. Why do you think that craving is still with us?
I do. I certainly can't say what it is. But, you know, based on the conversations that I have and just based on my own feeling as a person, you know, death is a universal experience and one of the few that we have. In a strange way, death is something that connects us because it's something we all, you know is waiting down the road. I think it's very fundamental to our human nature to want to speak about it and understand it.
What does social media offer for those dealing with not just dying, but serious illnesses and, you know, watching their parents or somebody that they love fade away?
Right. This was one of the sort of biggest issues that the article tackled. I spoke with numerous patients who have both suffered cancer and who are suffering from cancer. They all had very positive things to say about social media's role in not combating their illness, but in enduring their illness. There's a woman named Kate Granger, a British doctor, who, you know, very unfortunately terminally ill from cancer. She decided recently to go off of any sort of chemo, off of treatment, and just let the disease run its course. She says that one of the greatest benefits about tweeting is just, as you might expect, a psychological benefit of having this comprehensive social network to reach out to in difficult times.
So it's therapeutic to share. And I would also imagine there's a way of getting feedback. And if we're looking at social media as a source for crowdsourcing information, is it a way of getting more accurate information about what's going on during that process that nobody talks about?
I think it allows patients and people suffering diseases or in death's throes to reach out to their friends, reach out to social networks, and also connect with networks that exist specifically around particular diseases. So for instance, I talked to two women who run a tweet chat called #BCSM, which stands for Breast Cancer Social Media. And it's a chat devoted exclusively to people who are dealing with breast cancer, who can go online, find a support group. Also, I spoke with a palliative care doctor named Christian Sinclair, who's very involved in social media. And there's a whole medical side of this too, where doctors increasingly are turning to social media as a means of disseminating good information to patients.
I remember reading after Scott Simon's Twitter vigil, I'm going to call it, that people tweeted to him that his post triggered grief for them. You know, things that were long buried. You know, I lost my father 10 years ago and your tweets made me cry. I'm wondering if this is the same thing that, you know, drives people to go watch Terms of Endearment over and over and over again. You know what I mean? That there's a kind of release in this. So what kind of purpose is it serving?
I think the whole dynamic that interests me the most and that Scott talked about a little bit when I spoke with him, not only for somebody suffering from an illness or somebody who themselves is close to death, they can use social media to create these networks and find information about healthcare. But there's a whole dynamic about just an everyday healthy person that social media provides, which is this sort of much vaguer experience of knowing what it is like to go through these experiences, to die and to be around those dying. Actually, I ended my piece with a quote from Scott, which says, "It's not that I think people should spend a lot of time thinking about death, but that they should spend more time thinking about the fact that our lives are precious and finite. If we understand that death is manifest and it's ahead of all of us, I think that helps us appreciate the fact that every second and every hour is utterly precious." So there's this whole idea that tweeting not only will provide comfort and a network for those who are suffering death immediately or who are about to face death, but provides a sort of general human connection to everybody.
I can absolutely get behind what Scott is saying, but let's look at the criticism here or things from the other side. The web opens up a big door for voyeurism and also the criticism that pithy posts present a kind of shallow vision of grief. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a big issue. And I wish if there's one thing I would have liked to go more into in the article, if there were more space, would definitely to get deeper into the objections. What I found was that there was a surprising amount of malice directed at the people who were treating themselves, which surprised me a little bit.
That's so interesting because I would think there would be more criticism for somebody sitting at the bedside tweeting about it. In other words, making somebody else's death their story.
And that just comes down to a lot of the intent and the way that it's presented. I know that at least with Scott, he says that he wrote these tweets with the intention to sort of just share these experiences that he thought people could connect to. I guess just like anything else, social media is very much a tool, you know, and its usefulness is going to be determined by the people using it and how they use it. So I think there's always very immediate lurking danger of social media veering into a sort of voyeuristic, trivial look at dying.
Paul Biseglio edits the digital magazine, The Land That I Live. He wrote about how social media is changing the way that we approach death for The Atlantic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We do have a link to read more at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter.